The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
On News Talk.
Hello and you're very welcome along to the latest episode in the Home Show podcast. My name is Sinead Ryan and I will be with you as a host for this episode. As several properties on Trump's Doonbeg Resort go up for sale, we take a look at what kind of people buy a home in a hotel resort. A writer's room is a very sacred place, but no two are the same. Award-winning children's author Sarah Webb joins me to kick off a new series asking famous authors about their writing space. Celtic Tiger-era interest-only mortgage terms are coming up now, leaving thousands severely out of pocket. Carl Dieter joins me to tell us all about them. And Niamh Maher will be talking conversation sets. Now, as many of you possibly know, my day job Monday to Friday is as a journalist. So I spend an awful lot of time in my home office, also known as the box bedroom. And I've used the same desk, the same chair and even the same creaky PC for as long as I can remember. Everything is laid out the way I want it. All my stationery, papers, files are precisely where I need them. I cannot bear anybody disturbing them. So I imagine it must be even more important for a creative writer like a novelist to have a perfect writing space. So we thought it'd be great fun to ask some well-known authors about the room they write in. And I think it could be a fascinating series. So this week, we are thrilled to have Sarah Webb along a little bit later to tell me all about where she writes. But let me know who you'd like us to ask in to ask about the writing space. Maybe your favourite author, maybe somebody you wonder how they do their work. We would love to hear from you and you're very welcome along to the Home Show. Now, during the Celtic Tiger era, thousands of people availed of a mortgage product that these days makes really no sense at all. They are the interest-only mortgages and those who bought them now owe potentially a huge bill to the bank they borrowed from and are worrying as their retirement years are looming ahead. Well, financial analyst Carl Dieter joins me now to discuss this type of thing. For those that don't know, Carl, you're very welcome along to the show. Describe to listeners the structure of the mortgage thing we're talking about, which is an interest-only mortgage.
Yeah, so normally when you get out a mortgage, you make a payment and you're paying back the interest, which is the rate that you have to pay, and you're paying back a little bit of what you owe, which is referred to as the capital, okay? Also known as a repayment mortgage. There was a type of mortgage where you could just pay the interest and nothing off the capital. And in some ways, it was a pretty smart product and loads of people use them. In fact, I have one myself. Mine is like, it's split between part of it on my first house that I bought that I couldn't sell because when I moved out of it, there was a crash and anyway, it was negative equity. So I still have this mortgage where I'm repaying part of it and the other part is on just the interest. Now, why did it make sense? Well, if you imagine, if you borrowed €1 million and you were doing it like on a standard repayment, you might be paying something like $6,000 a month of a mortgage. Whereas if you did it on, you know, interest only and interest rates were, say, like at one stage, you went down to
1%. 1%, yeah.
You know, for the trackers who, like, yeah, the rate was zero, theirs was typically 1% above, you would have been paying something like $833 a month. So it was really good from a cash management perspective. And certainly some lenders like KBC, who they were called IIB back at that point, and now they don't lend anymore, but they had something where you could do the first 3 years on interest only. And that really made it like super manageable because the first few years when you get a mortgage, they're crushing because like you go from not having any debt to not only having this debt to like having to kit out a house. There's always something that needs buying. You're paying insurances, you're paying life cover, you know. And so it actually has a really appropriate place. The problem is people got used to it and adjusted their life around it. And then the only consistent thing, not only in your life, but in the universe in general, is that time marches on. And suddenly they're like, wow, you know, it's 20 years later. And yeah, what am I going to do?
Yeah. No, so the plan, though, was it not, that one of two things would happen in the 20 years or 30 years. First of all, house prices would keep rising and rising and rising and rising and rising. And suddenly you could pay it all back.
They did from the time where you took them out. Strangely enough, house prices are higher now than they were in the Celtic.
But that necessitated then 20 years on or 25 years on, you were to sell that house, pay back the bank. And now what are you going to do? And then the other option seemed to be, at the time, look, your pension lump sum will pay it off. So you don't need to save separately for it. And like, So it is now 15, 20 years since the boom, the mid-boom years, and these loans are coming due now. So for people who still owe the principal, are there those, or are you one of them, that is now looking at this going, what am I going to do?
Yeah, so like no one wakes up one day and just gets zapped into the body of a 60-year-old. So like we have to accept that that's not a thing outside of Hollywood, you know, Tom Hanks type movies, yeah. Or zapped into the body of a 21-year-old. You know, I'd love if that could happen to me. I'd love to be young again. But, you know, let's just accept that that's not real. So what happened was they made a series of consumption choices along the way. Now, like when interest rates were at zero and a lot of these borrowers would have been paying, you know, 1% a year, which on a mortgage of 300,000 would be a mortgage repayment of, you know, it's minuscule amounts,
yeah,
that you're looking at.
But they were lulled into a false sense of security then, because the mortgage just seemed so cheap because you're not making any capital repayments.
Yeah. Well, look, if you're paying 250 a month and you can't figure out that you're not going to pay off 300,000 euro by doing something like that, you know, there's a bit of cop on. And look, people can say, well, I had my reasons. Okay, I get that. You had your reasons. You know, the economy was hard. Prices went down, you had kids, you know, some expense, needed a car, whatever it was.
Are some of those reasons that they wanted just a trophy home or a bigger home?
I'd like to say not in the majority of cases, but there are people who want to have big stuff.
And this is how you afford
it. It's much better if you don't have to, you know, do what it takes to get it the old-fashioned way. You know, you can just borrow and then keep that on the hock forever. But so there's a few things, right? The first thing you said was the idea was that you go to the future and then one day you sell the home. Well, that's still possible because house prices have gone up. The other thing is that, you know, maybe a pension lump sum could clear it. That's still the case. Maybe your pension lump sum will clear it. The other thing is, though, as well, your typical borrower profile back then was, you know, about 30 years old. And so they're actually, believe it or not, mostly age 50 to 60 now. And you can actually borrow at age 70. So there is the opportunity to get extra time.
And refinance it, like.
Well, refinancing is one choice.
Or stretch it out.
Or you can actually go into a mortgage arrears resolution process with your existing lender and they might extend the term for you with them. And maybe you just make a plan to say, look, like if I get a pension lump sum, it would clear off everything other than, say, 75 grand. So how do I pay that off over the next, you know, 8 years or something? Mm. So there are pathways to solve this.
How are the banks viewing these people now? Because, I mean, they lent this stuff. They knew within a very short period of time this might have been a pig in a poke, certainly when the crash happened, and maybe there was a few years where they were worrying about not getting their money back. Are they generally hands off until the term is up, or are they beginning to question borrowers?
They're in there early. So like I said, I'll take my own case as an example. I'd bought a house and it was around 300,000. So I had 240,000 on a regular repayment mortgage and 60 grand interest only. And by doing that, my payments came down a lot and, you know, it allowed me to do other things, which is what I wanted. Like that was my choice. I made it, live with it. And then about 8 years ago, you know, you get this letter saying, look, we know that your loan will finish in like whatever it was, like 2035. And, you know, do you have a plan in place? Because you have to be aware this 60,000 is not going to be paid off. And I was thinking to myself, wow, A, you're totally correct. B, I knew this. I made that choice. I work in this industry. So it's not like, hey, what just dropped out of the sky in my head. So I started to just make payments of 300 euro a month, which over time will bring that, you know, balance down. That at the end of that mortgage, I'll probably still own about 15,000. But I'm just hoping that at that point in time, I'll have that money there. Or maybe I'll increase it by 100 euro a month or something like that. So I choose to overpay. They did tell people about this in advance and they were advised about it at the start that like you will get to the end and owe everything. So like I said, this is not surprise material. The only surprise here is for those who finally took their head out of the sand and then said, saw this train coming from them, which has been on that track for 20 years plus. You know?
But I'm thinking about the people who did it maybe the opposite way to you, who took out the bulk of it on interest only and only a very small amount maybe on capital or none of it. And primarily this would be maybe buy-to-let investors, landlords.
For them it makes total sense too, by the way.
Because of cash flow.
Not only that. We need to distinguish here, okay? There's different kind of like why you bought a house. You buy a house to live in it. That's what I'm talking about so far. So the house I had, I lived in it. I don't live in it now, but like I did at the time. And lots of people who are going to be the ones who have a problem lived in the property. Because then when the time comes and if you can't pay it off, this idea of, sell the house. They don't want to sell the house. That's my point. They actually want to stay there having not paid for it. So that's who we're talking about so far. When it comes to investors, for investors, interest only is utterly sensible because you were allowed to offset 100% of your mortgage interest against the income.
Of course.
So if you bought a house, say, let's just say it was, you know, 300,000, you put down a down payment, you get an interest only mortgage of 200,000, you know, 3%, and that's 500 a month for just the interest, and your
tenant is easily covering 1,000, that then.
Then you have 500 of cash flow, and hopefully the property goes up in value. And if you were able to sit it out, the properties actually have gone up in value. Mm. And so that makes total sense. And then you get to the end, and if it's worth 30,000 more, then you made this capital gain of 30 grand, and you made all this cash flow all through those years.
So if you've got them, yeah, so that absolutely made sense. And also, they're not going to be homeless as a result of this, or not have to make a decision about where they're going to live.
This is where the accidental landlords get crushed, because accidental landlords are the ones where they lived in a house that was on a repayment mortgage, and then they move out and they say, well, my mortgage is 1,000 a month, but sure, the rent is 1,000 a month. So the two are matched and I'm grand, but you're not, because the way tax works is that the portion of your loan that you're repaying, the bit that you owe, that's actually taxable. And so they all got cracked with claiming tax relief at source in the wrong way, of these big tax bills. We dealt with a lot of those cases as people who had bought starter homes had to move into bigger homes, and they were just caught in this situation. So there's a lot of complexity in this, Sinead, that I hope I'm not
killing
the topic, but there's all so many different things that you got to kind of
Are they still sold, Carl, these type of mortgages? And are they a good idea for a certain market?
Of course they are. Here's the thing. Although I may send the people listening today insane, there is a place for almost everything. There's a place for 100% mortgage. I'm telling you now, I'll argue that with you right now if you want. There's a place for 40-year mortgage terms or 50-year mortgage terms. There's a place for interest only. There's a place for, you know, a loan where you make no repayment in the first year. There's a place for everything in the great wild ecosystem that is this world. It's just a case of making sure that it's appropriate and the people who make those choices know what they're doing some point down the road, so it doesn't come back and crack them wide open in 20 years' time.
All right. So what would you advise for somebody who is head in the sand, hadn't thought about it up to now, and is thinking, am I supposed to use my pension for this, or what will I do? You're saying get advice.
Yeah, well, get your head out of the sand. Okay. Because, you know, the one thing I'll say, I've encountered a lot of people, they're heading their butt down through the years and never worked out well. And, you know, I've even made stupid choices myself and they just don't work out well. Address them. A problem that you approach to solve always becomes less than the problem that you ignore until it keeps growing and growing and becomes, you know, a giant mountain. So, A, get some advice. B, you know, you can talk to your lender. They actually have really good teams called the Mortgage Arrears Resolution Process Team. They have to have it clearly marked out on their website homepage. You can call them, tell them that you're pre-arrears, that you're worried you won't be able to pay this off. They can give you payment plans. They can look at different options that you can make in terms of how you might pay it off someday. You know, and I think that that's the best way to go about it. If you do need to change your home loan, you can talk to a broker. And the broker bit is important. About 40% of the market you can't access unless you go through a broker. And just solve it with some, you know, standard progress. It's like, you know, if you want to lose weight, do I eat chipper every day? Or do I eat, you know, diet or better diet and start exercising? Like, this is not, you don't need to be a professional to know the answer to this stuff. It's like obvious to me. So hopefully it's obvious to people in that situation. You got to do something.
Okay. Well, Carl Dieter, hard-hitting as always, but on the nose.
That was a
kind version. That was right. Okay, empathy. Listen, Carl, thanks a million. And very interesting to hear that you had one of these as well, because I was on the side of people who thought they're a daft idea, but you have made me kind of rethink the circumstances in which they made a whole heap of sense. So thanks a million for that, and thanks for coming in on The Home Show. Now, the art of writing is a particular discipline unique to every author. Some need light, others a single lamp, some need quiet, others need background music to keep them focused. But is there a perfect writer's room, or is it a process of adaptation and evolution? Well, joining me now to kick off our new series on writer's rooms is Sarah Webb, award-winning children's author and events manager at Halfway Up the stairs in Greystones. Sarah, it's a pleasure to speak to you today. You're very welcome along to the Home Show. And we will get to talking about your latest book. But I'd love to start by asking you where you live and what you love about it.
Ah, hello, Sinead. I live in Dunleary. I grew up in Dalkey, but when we were looking for houses roughly just over 20 years ago, Dunleary was where we could afford. But I absolutely love Dunleary. I love being by the sea. If I walk out of my house and down the hill a little bit, I can see the sea. And we live in a Georgian house, so an old house in Dunleary. And yeah, it's just a really nice, buzzy place. There's cinemas. There is the lovely Pavilion Theatre, which is a great local theatre. There's bookshops. And yeah, I find it a really nice kind of buzzy, hubby kind of place to live.
It is indeed. I know it well and often go for a walk out there. So when did you start writing, and was your process different when you started to the way you write now as a full-time writer?
Yeah, so I suppose I've been writing on and off professionally for nearly 30 years now. So, but I've had other work on and off during that time as well. So when I started writing as a job professionally, I had young children, so it was a little bit different than now when they are older. So, yeah, I suppose it has evolved over the years, and where I've written has evolved and how I write has evolved. And every year also seems to be a little different. Obviously, the pandemic kind of threw everyone off a little bit, or made them rethink, I think, how they did things. So it's definitely still a process.
Describe to me then, Sarah, the room that you write in.
So I have a writing study, which has a window in front of, I have a desk in front of a window, and it is lined by books. So it's kind of library / study. There's good light in here. And this is where I would do admin. It's where I would do book reviews. It's where I teach sometimes online. And then I have a tiny, tiny desk upstairs in the corner of my bedroom, which is my old school desk from when I was doing my homework when I was a girl. And it is where I've written every single book I've ever written.
Wow.
So it's kind of tucked in.
Like, it sounds to me, the study, and that's brilliant, and that really sounds like the place you should be writing. Although I think I would often find looking out the window distracting. But this little desk that you have, do you think there's a kind of a symbolic thing there? Does it get you into the mind of a child or your own childhood to write there?
No, that's an interesting one. I've never really thought about it, but no, I think it's just it's a really nice little small desk, so it's just a really good size. But I suppose maybe I'm a little bit superstitious about it or something. Often writers and artists of a lot of different disciplines can be a little bit superstitious. Some like to light a candle before they start writing, or some might play music. But yeah, I know when I'm at that desk, I am supposed to be writing, not answering emails, not playing with the internet, you know. And I would switch the phone off. I would switch the internet connection off on my laptop. And so I suppose it's kind of a message to myself just to switch off and write.
Okay, it's like a psychological thing. You're writing head on now and get on with it.
Yeah, get on with it.
So tell me then, light, sound, tidiness, how important are those elements to you?
Light, yes. Yeah. A good chair, funnily enough, is incredibly important. Obviously, my physio, because now and again I do spend too long at my desk, and if I have my legs crossed or anything like that, I can put my back out quite quickly. And she's always given out to me, and she says, set a timer for every 15 or 20 minutes, get up, stretch. I'm here going, there is no way I'm setting a timer. If I'm in the middle of writing a really good scene, I'm not going to get up and stretch and go back, because it might not be there, you know. So I think it's the problem in that when you're kind of in the flow of writing, when you're actually almost living that scene with your characters, you can't just stop and go and have a stretch. It's just, not going to happen.
So good chair is very important. Light is very important. Do you like silence, or do you like the radio on in the background, or do you listen to classical music, or nothing at all?
Nothing. No, as quiet as possible. Mm. Absolutely. I know I do have friends who are illustrators, and they can listen. I'm very jealous. They can listen to podcasts. They can listen to music with lyrics. I might just about be able to get away with kind of film music or classical music. But no, for me, silence, as quiet as possible. Yeah. I don't mind the odd kind of bark of a dog or hum of traffic, but as quiet as possible. I get very easily distracted, Sinead.
Oh, is that it? So you need something that kind of concentrates the mind and not lets you absorb that distraction. Is that it?
Exactly. And okay. I don't want to be pulled out of the story at all. So,
Now, you do other jobs too, as you said. You're very, very busy, and you have a lot going on in terms of teaching and your involvement in the events at the Greystones spot. How does that conflict, or does it conflict, with your writing space? Because it would seem to me then you need to have files and folders and cork boards related to all that stuff separately.
Absolutely. So my study is covered in very organized piles. So if you walked in, you might think it was slightly chaotic, but I know which each pile is. I'm a devil for notebooks. I love a good notebook. So I have a lot of notebooks. I would have a lot of filing systems. A lot of things like spreadsheets and things are on my laptop, so they're not so bad. Mm. And I would, because I review children's books for the Irish Independent, I have piles of books in month of publication. So I have a whole pile at the moment of September books I'm reading, October, November, even up till January and onwards next year. So it is quite full, but it's nice. You know, it's all related to children's books. So it all kind of weaves in and out of children's books. So.
Yeah. And it keeps that kind of spirit, I suppose, going. Although I am always interested in writers who are critics, and I know quite a few of them, because I wonder, do you have to stop or prevent yourself getting inspiration from other people's books? And by inspiration, I mean, you know, plagiarizing.
I have so many ideas of my own. It's never really been an issue. I think in a way we are made up of everything we read, but we're also made up of everything we see, everything we hear from a young age, right up. You know, we are like magpies. I think most artists would say they're inspired by a whole wide range of things. It would be very unusual that I would be inspired by one particular small detail. It would be the atmosphere of something, or, you know, to be honest, it's more likely to be a painting or a piece of sculpture. Or, you know, I went to the Hilary Herron sculpture exhibition recently. I find that really inspiring. I think, reading other people's work is not... Yeah, I don't kind of go, oh, I must take that word.
It's not going to conflict with you.
No.
And so talk to me then about the next Sarah Webb book that is coming out. It's called I See the Moon and the Moon Sees Me. Tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah, it's a sweet book. It's favourite nursery rhymes from an Irish childhood. So over the years, I've been creating these books with O'Brien Press, and they are very much a reflection of my childhood, but also rhymes, songs, lullabies, all kinds of things that I collect, you know, during the year. And I put them all together into these books, and they're illustrated books, so they're for sharing with little ones. But what I was really thrilled about was Lisa O'Neill.
Yes.
The wonderful singer-songwriter has given us permission to reproduce Goodnight World, which is a beautiful lullaby that she sings. It starts, settle your head, pet, send your bones to sleep. Every moment that we rest brings a moment's peace. But it's just such a beautiful song, and the lyrics actually look amazing written down. So I'm really looking forward to sharing that and loads of other rhymes and songs.
Wonderful. And that'll be out in October, I believe. So the very, very best of luck with that. You are very, very busy. And it sounds to me that despite all of your conflicting demands, you have set your own writer's room up exactly how you need it to be. Sarah Webb, thank you so much for joining us on The Home Show today.
Thank you, Sinead.
Now, you may recently have seen that three cottages have been, well, cottages, vast homes have been put up on the market for almost €1 million each at the Doonbeg Golf Resort owned by former and hopefully to stay former US President Donald Trump. But why do people want to live beside a hotel rather than in a town or by the beach? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Louise Kennedy, Director of Lisney Sotheby's International Realty. Louise, you're very welcome along to The Home Show. Tell us exactly what is on the market at Doonbeg.
Yeah, Sinead. So there are three beautiful properties for sale in Doonbeg at the moment, ranging from 850,000 to €1 million. These properties, believe it or not, are fairly common in Ireland these days. Many of the premier hotels and golf resorts have independently owned housing. So places like the K Club, Adair Manor, Doonbeg, as we mentioned, and Mount Juliet. There's usually a one or two for sale at any given time, really.
So these homes then, I mean, they're substantial enough. I know they're called cottages, but they're big enough and they're beautifully they are furnished, aren't they? They're turnkey, as they say.
They are turnkey. Yeah, exactly.
So tell me a little bit. Tell me kind of the interested buyer that might look around something like this or wonder what kind of buyer says, do you know where I'd love to live? Beside a hotel.
Yeah, well, there's a variety of buyers, Sinead. So we have owner-occupiers, so they're people who live there all year through. So some of those are obviously drawn to the golf courses and golf fanatics. But actually, believe it or not, there's families and other people who live there as well full time. Aside from that, then we have people who buy them as holiday homes. So maybe they're based in Dublin and they want a holiday home close by. And then we've the overseas buyers, Sinead. So overseas buyers who are buying maybe a second home in Ireland or a holiday home again. So they might spend some of their time here while they work, say, in New York or whatever, or use it as a holiday home in the summer. So they'd be typically the sort of people we would see buying here.
Now, what are the features of living on a resort like that that appeals most to the buyer?
I suppose buying in a resort development, it gives you the benefit of living in a very high-end, well-maintained development. So although you'll pay a service charge, things like the common areas, the lovely landscaped gardens, pools, you know, all those facilities are all included in this. So you literally have facilities on your doorstep. They tend to be very secure developments as well. So again, if people are using them part-time, at least they know they can lock them up and leave them, you know, and it's all very secure. Some people might prefer living in a town or village just to be closer, I suppose, to the wider community or schools. But actually, there tends to be a great sense of community in these resorts. So as I said earlier, we've actually found a lot of families living here as well. So lots of advantages to living there. The other thing, I suppose, you know, if you've a lovely view of a golf course, Sinead, the likelihood is it'll stay that way. Whereas if you buy elsewhere, who knows what'll be in front and behind you in 5 or 10 years. So that's another appealing, you know, they're usually beautiful to look at.
And I suppose that one of the things that might appeal to some of these people, and I, you know, you'd want to be wealthy enough to buy one of them, especially if it's not your first home, would be the security aspect, because these resorts are manned really year round, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, they are. There's huge security. So again, you can lock them up and leave them, you know, much better than a standalone house. There's that sense of community and constant security. They're appealing from that point of view.
Now, one of the interesting rules I read about coming to look at this, because obviously you want to avoid tire kickers and people just having a nosy, buyers who are interested must be approved for golf club membership. What's that all about?
Yes. So in some of the resorts, you have to be approved for golf membership. Not all of them, though, Sinead. Some of them aren't linked to golf membership at all. But I suppose in any golf club, you have to be approved prior to joining. So it's not that different. And I would say a lot of people who are drawn to these developments, the majority probably play golf. So I don't think it will be a huge issue for them.
Yeah, they'd want to play golf there, of course. Otherwise, what's the point? And come here to me, when people live in these places, then do you find, like, they are proper houses. So obviously they have all the facilities. But do you find then that they tend to use, or can they use all the hotel facilities? Do they get discounted meals? Can they use the gym? All that kind of thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, you don't have to be a golf fanatic. So obviously they are drawn to it. But other people live here who aren't. You know, there's so many activities and amenities at your fingertips. So there's restaurants, walks, tennis courts, swimming pools, you know, so all of that is enough to keep the non-golfers busy. So, yeah, you don't have to be a golfer to be drawn here.
Is there a requirement to be a Trump supporter, Louise?
I would think not, Sinead. No, we won't go down that road.
Well, it certainly has. The Doombeg facility certainly has not impinged on his profits one little bit. It's doing very, very well, according to the latest accounts from it. So it's obviously popular, and it is rumoured that the former president particularly likes it and may fly in the odd time. I presume that any property owners would get advance warning or maybe a note about that through the letterbox.
And I'd say that the already good security will be stepped up for that. Yeah.
Indeed, indeed. Come here, are they good as investment properties? So people who maybe want to buy them but don't want to live in them, is there a rental market that's allowed on a facility like that?
Yeah, they actually perform very well as investment properties. So again, investors, it's a great opportunity for them. Some of the hotels do a rental program where you can let them out through the hotels, either all year or part of the year. So that's, you know, very handy that that's taken over for you as well. So yeah, as an investment property, they're a great move.
Mm. And what is the interest like? I mean, are these expected to sell quickly? Are they, you know, getting lots of people looking around them, or what? Do you think?
Yeah, generally properties like that don't stay on the market long. So as I said, there's usually a couple on at any given time, but they tend to sell pretty well. And I think the price point they're at is pretty average for that style of property. Mm. So I would imagine they will move well. Yes.
All right. And possibly before the November election. Who knows? Louise Kenny, Director of Lisney Sotheby's International Realty. Thanks a million for joining us on The Home Show to tell us all about that. You're very welcome back to the Home Show podcast. I'm Sinead Ryan. If you'd like to get in touch with us, it is thehomeshow@newstalk.com. Now, conversation fills my life. It fills all our lives all day. And sometimes we strive for a little bit of peace and quiet with just one other person to really listen to. Well, now there's even a type of furniture to facilitate that. It's called the conversation set. And we sent Niamh Marr, creative director at thejournal.ie, shopping for them. Niamh, you're very welcome back to The Home Show.
Thank you. I'm always so happy to be here. This one in particular is actually going to get me in some trouble because there's a few that I found on my shopping adventures that I'm actually running by my husband as we speak because I fell in love with them. So yeah, these are lovely additions, indoor and outdoor, so we can get into it a little bit.
Okay, so for the uninitiated, describe to us what a conversation set of furniture looks like.
Absolutely. Well, they're typically outdoor pieces, but I wanted to, because of the time that we're in and how we're coming into the new season, I wanted to look at indoor ones as well. But they're kind of like Ronseal. They're exactly what they say on the tin. They're supposed to promote conversation. Now, I actually found out something which I didn't know while I was doing my research with this. So conversation sets can usually be with larger pieces of outdoor furniture that can accommodate 5 to 8 people. But bistro sets is what we're really talking about here. So these are the two specific tables that are faced towards each other and a little table in the middle. So they don't have to take up a huge amount of your outdoor or your indoor space. And yeah, they just promote conversation. They're a lovely place to sit. If you get a pocket of sunshine, say outside in the garden or even in your kitchen, you have a bit of a corner that you don't know what to do with it. It's perfect because it doesn't take up too much space and it's not going to break the bank as well.
Yeah, so they're three pieces, two chairs and a table. And you'll often find them. And indeed, I think they're marketed for apartment balconies,
yes,
or even if you've got a house with you know, garden furniture in it. This could be a pocket down the end of the garden on another patio or where there's a bit of sunshine, just for a table and two chairs on their own.
Absolutely. Perfect for smaller spaces, perfect for apartment balconies. And then there are even some in my list that I've included that you can fold away when the season says, like today, for example, when it's been every single thing under the sun because it's August and you never know what we're going to get.
Yeah. So really, when it comes to these, we're looking for durability, but we're also looking for neatness. So these aren't big sprawling pieces to lounge on out in the garden or in your house. They're just small little pieces. And that's why they're best suited to the kind of boutique spaces.
Absolutely. But they can add so much as well. And I think garden furniture in general, but pieces like this, which you can also utilize inside. I tried to really get pieces that would work inside and outside because we live in Ireland. But it's great if you don't want to commit to huge, cumbersome pieces of furniture that can really overload a garden, but I feel like they can really add something and people are drawn to them as well, whether it's in the evening for a glass of wine or in the morning for a cup of coffee, you know?
Yeah, and it kind of maybe encourages you to go out to have your little, you know, I mean, you wouldn't like maybe go out and sit at a table for eight on your own with a coffee, but you definitely would with something, little tiled table and your little cushioned chair and read the paper. All right. Now, so tell us what you have found.
Fine. So we're going to start with Easy Living. I found these two wicker chairs and a bistro table set. It's called a Menorca style and it runs at €149. Again, there's some really nice sales on at the moment. Bad for me and my wallet, but very good if you're in the market for this. So this one kind of partners contemporary design with comfort. The two armchairs and the table has tempered glass on it as well. So it's a comfy foam cushions, sturdy metal frame, which you'll see a lot in bistro sets or bistro. I don't know which way. People are going to text in really annoyed with me for saying bistro. I'm sorry, bistro. I don't know how to pronounce it. And it's recommended that you clean this once a year. So I love the balance of durability, but also low maintenance. Love that for us.
And 149, I mean, look, that's not going to break the bank.
Nope.
That is a very simple way to jazz up an apartment balcony or a small patio.
Absolutely. It's a bargain. Really nice natural tones on that one as well. You'll see a lot of natural colours in this list because I'm quite drawn to them. Another one that I found, there's a huge summer clearance sale on wayfair.ie at the moment. So this is very similar, but it's a little bit, tiny bit pricier. So it's the Kashela three-piece bistro set with foldable table and chairs, which I love. $154.99 for this one, and it actually comes in a mint. It comes also in a blue or a grey. Sorry, this isn't similar to the previous one. It's actually completely different because it's a foldable one.
Yeah.
So this really looks like that traditional bistro, almost French vibe. And it's ideal for your garden, balconies, and indoors as well. You can bring it in, especially if you have a conservatory. It would really match that if you get some nice sunshine.
And again, a kind of a metal arrangement, and you can put a little padded cushion on it and throw those into your shed or into another room
anywhere.
When you're not
and
using
the chairs
it.
Actually weigh under 5 kilograms each, so this set has plastic feet as well, which prevents any scratching on your floors, so no assembly required as well. And if you were to order that today, delivery would be in the first week of September, so really good deals on Wayfair at the moment.
Alright, that's great. And I think I heard they now have a warehouse down in Galway. They used to be a kind of a UK brand, but you'll get that
fairly
quickly.
So you're getting really good delivery times on Wayfair.
Okay. Now, anything in the kind of going up a stage in the market?
Yeah, so I wanted to look at garden centres. So a lot of people, when they're looking for these, go to garden centres. So I found a really beautiful wicker bistro set from Johnstown Garden Centre. Now, it's €495. But it's reduced from €695. It's made from 100% PE wicker and it's suitable for inside and outside. So extra deep cushions with this one. You're getting a lot for your money. They're water repellent as well. So they're very comfortable for a three-piece set. And again, the table is finished with tempered glass as well. So you're getting really sturdy furniture for what I would consider a good price. But I do think garden centres tend to run a little bit pricier. They have a lot bigger conversation pieces in this particular garden centre that go up to €3,495.
Wow. Yeah.
But this is with a fire pit and it seats 8 people with 2 benches. So that's
a totally different market kind of product for that. Okay.
But garden centres are great.
They're super, and Johnstown is one of the biggest, so it has lots and lots of options there from a very, very small light price right up to the posh end of the stuff. All right. Now, of course, you mentioned there, Niamh, that you can come into the house and create a conversation space, or as I would call it, a book nook.
Yeah, exactly.
Just for me, which would have a big do not disturb sign on the other other chair. But that's okay.
A solo conversation is still a conversation. So a do not enter sign is fine with these conversation pieces, whatever floats your boat. So I wanted to look at some indoor options as well. So I went to Sklum, S-K-L-U-M, if you're looking for the website. Really nice furniture available there for good prices. So this is a pack of two wooden armchairs, down 11% at the moment. Again, lots of clearance on.
These are beautiful.
Really beautiful. So down from 429 to 379 euro. So I think the comfort level for me is what really drew me to these. So armchairs, I find usually now in the mid-century modern style, you can actually get them without arms on them, and I just will never understand why an armchair doesn't have arms. But these have arms, waterproof as well, so if you did want to bring them outside, you could. And the cushions are removable, and yeah, just really beautiful for
lovely light wood.
Yeah, a light wood. And on Sklum, the prices do run. They can, like, you're getting really good solid wood furniture, but it can be pricey. So I think for a pack of two like this for 379 at the moment is a really good deal.
Brilliant. Okay, now you found a dupe on Wayfair as well for this.
Well, this is more expensive.
Yeah, okay.
But at the same time, it's a very similar style. And it was really hard to get me off Wayfair.ie, to be honest with you, when I was doing this research, because it just has really good options. So there are more colour options with this one. So if you love a mid-century style with a modern flair, this is really good, because there is a white one, there's grey, and there's also yellow as well, which I thought was nice.
Yeah, I thought this had kind of a 60s, 70s vibe over it, because
Definitely.
It's this lovely blonde wood, but it has curves on
it. It's got the curves.
And it's kind of, it struck me that you would sink into this seat.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for 440 euro, it's a little bit pricier, but at the same time, you know, it's stain resistant. You actually get an accent cushion with it, as well as the obvious chair cushions too. It's a solid wood frame. And yeah, there is assembly required with this one. So just wanted to highlight that. It's not
arriving. Well, you can collapse into it afterwards.
But the comfort level that you'll get from this is brilliant. And again, it's the two armchairs, similar to the Sklum one that I had before. Now, there's no tables with these, so they are slightly different, but again, these are the indoor ones, and there's actually really good deals on side tables at the moment on Wayfair.ie. And the Declan one is what stuck out to me. That's $71.99 at the moment. It comes in black, pearl white, or a lovely laurel green, and again, it can match with lots of different conversation pieces.
Yeah, and I suppose let's talk about the staging of this for a while, because I mean, you know, there's no hard and fast rules about it all having to be matchy-matchy, about everything to have to be the same, or about how you place it. But you don't want your conversation set to look like you're holding a job interview either.
Yeah, that's the thing. Sometimes it can almost venture into the corporate, and you really don't want to do that. What I've found is that if I have a corner of my house that I think is just not working, or I'm missing out on something, hanging baskets with flowers. Hanging baskets are coming out the ceiling now. Dan, my husband, is very used to me going, get up there now on that stepladder. He's an absolute pro at hanging baskets, because I have them in my office nook. I have them in a conversation.
Oh, you use them inside as well?
Oh, I use them inside. They're in the bathrooms. Okay. Like, literally, the man can do no wrong when it comes to hanging things out of the ceiling. He's a pro now.
Right. No, it is early in the morning now, Niamh. None of that, please.
But he's really good at it. And I find that it's whenever I think something isn't working, and imagine these two chairs facing each other there with a lovely table in the middle, and then just picture a couple of lovely wicker baskets hanging down in the middle of it, you know, like they really add something to it.
Okay, so it's about setting the mood for where your conversation set goes,
exactly,
as much as the placement of the chairs, because they probably shouldn't be facing each other.
No,
because it is a bit corporate-y. So if they're
exactly
at an angle.
Yeah, and you don't always have to have somebody else there as well. Like, it can be a really, you know, introverted moment for you to have this place that becomes an escape for you, which I really like when it comes to these.
Okay, lovely. Now, you find one last one, which I must say, I wouldn't be a fan of this design, because I'd be afraid I wouldn't be able to get out of it.
Oh, it's the egg.
So these are egg, but they're nearly like a cone-shaped seat. So they're like bamboo-looking or wicker cones, and you sit right down into it, and you kind of need good tie work to get up out of it, or well, somebody hauling you.
That's always the fear when it comes to these kind of things. You're lucky I didn't include any bean bags, because I've got one of those as well in my house. And honestly, once I sit in that, it's game over. Can't get up for days. But yeah, I actually found these on Amazon. Amazon.co.uk is where I found these. So it's a Ray Gann three-piece bistro egg designer string chair. So again, can be used indoor and outdoor. It's 108 quid. So not too bad at all. Comes in natural.
That's the cheapest yet.
Yeah, it comes in natural and black. Amazon is great for these kind of finds. You know, if you actually just go and type in something, you'd be really surprised what you'd find. It has a very retro look, but it is something that I suppose is, you know, can suit somebody and then somebody else will hate it. But it's got a strong steel frame, so it's going to be durable. It's going to last. The table actually has removable safety glass on it as well. If you've got little ones around and you don't want the glass there, you can just take it off. Plastic caps as well that protect your floors. And like you mentioned, it's the rattan string actually on the chairs, which again, it's very much a style choice. I love rattan. It's all over my house. I feel like it's never going to go away, but it is definitely a style choice. But Amazon actually has really nice additions to this piece. There's a love seat bench that you can get, which is also very natural. That's £98. And so you could actually turn a conversation set into a bigger conversation set if you wanted by adding a love seat. So yeah, don't cross off Amazon off your list when it comes to finding little furniture finds. Or let me do it for you. I'm happy to do it.
You are indeed, and you're always very good at doing it. Niamh Marr, Commercial Creative Director with thejournal.ie, thank you very much for bringing us that conversation about these bistro sets, conversation sets. So now you know what to ask for when you are going shopping or checking it out online. Niamh, thanks a million. And you can check out all of Niamh's posts, in fact, on maybe if you're beanbag up there, I don't know, maybe baby Lola
there's
sitting in
definitely
it.
There's definitely a few of them in there. Lola loves the beanbag. Niamh_Marr. You'll find me on Instagram.
All right, fantastic. All right. And that finishes our show for today. I hope you've enjoyed all our bits and pieces. And thank you to all my guests and indeed all of our listeners who I'm delighted to inform that we have been nominated for an IMRO Radio Award, which I'm very, very excited about because we were only as good as our listeners and indeed as our team and our contributors. So thank you all for that. That is all we have time for this week. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, something you'd like to hear about on The Home Show, we would love to hear from you. You can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You'll find me across the socials I'm still involved with. I'm still on hanging in on X there. You can go and have a look at that or on Instagram and you'll find me there. And if there's anything you've missed, of course, it is up on our podcast, which is also called The Home Show. And you can find that on wherever you get your pods from. My thanks this week to Simon Keane, Aidan McKelvey and Stephen McClune, who was on sound. Have a fantastic weekend. We will be back here next week doing more of the same.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
Saturday morning at 8. On News Talk.